whatever. I don't know much about reincarnation.
Although, me neither.
Yeah. Though if it's true, I might not be coming back in. I'm coming back in a lower form next time, I'm pretty sure.
Some sort of ground-dwelling bird.
Yeah, if I'm lucky, I will not have legs in my next life.
I'm my belly. Did I screw that up? And you can get Listen Up for only
$14. Jeff Wood, how are you?
I am. My body's still in Mumbai. My mind is here, partially.
I've never heard that statement come out of your mouth. My body is still in Mumbai. What? Tell me about that. Why is your body in Mumbai?
I went on a missions trip to Mumbai for 10 days. It's probably about 7 days that we actually spent there. The flight is about 24 hours of travel. So you lose, on the way there, you lose like 2 days. So you fly for like 24 hours. It's like 30 hours total with all the shuttles and cars and whatnot. Then you get dropped in the heart of like one of the most densely populated cities, I think, in the world, just surrounded by really, really intense poverty. So it's a severe culture shock and perspective change. And
so you leave IAH, and where do you fly to?
We had a layover in Munich, so the first flight, I think, was 10 hours, 50 minutes. Layover in Munich for like 45 minutes, and then another 8-hour flight to Mumbai.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So,
what's that like? What's India like?
It is, so they don't abide by any traffic laws there. So you can have a 3-lane highway with 6 cars deep on it.
Just offensive driving courses everywhere.
It's the craziest thing you've ever seen.
And it works, right?
It somehow works. Not efficiently,
yeah.
But it works. But yeah, I mean, you'll see kind of like here during Harvey, in some places you saw blue tarps on a lot of ceiling, mm-hmm. or a lot of roofs. You look out over Mumbai and there's shanty towns just as far as you can see, all blue tarp roofs with satellite dishes. So they have a tarp for a roof, but they still have internet and right. TV running through there. So it's a wild experience. The poverty there is extreme. There's no middle class. It's kind of like super wealthy people, and then, you know, majority is poverty there. So
what were y'all doing?
We were visiting 4 schools. My brother is a part of a network of schools in Mumbai, and they serve kids who have kind of fallen through the cracks of the system there. So they're born without social security numbers. I sent you a video of one family, and the dad makes equivalent. I think it's like $1 a day, but in rupees, it's, you know, 800 or 900 rupees or something like that. Or maybe less. I think 1,000 rupees is $10. I think I'm still jet lagged, but he makes like $1 a day. So they barely have enough money to feed their 2 kids. So what these organizations do that we went and visited and helped with is they provide a meal during the day for the kids. They provide free uniform, free books, free education. And they prepare them for, it's basically like kindergarten, the way their system is. It's basically kindergarten, first grade, and it prepares them for the next stage of education in India. It's a little bit different than the States, but so visiting families, ministering to families, visiting the churches there. And
the video you showed me, you sent me, because that was, you'd taken it, I think, that day.
Yes.
Maybe the day before. Was, I mean, quite frank, I mean, you said this is their house. And I put that in like massively big air quotes.
Right.
But it was a space. Was it freestanding, or was it an apartment? Because it was about the size of a broom closet.
Mm-hmm.
Literally. Like, I could, to lay, I, it couldn't have been more than 7 feet across.
No, it's probably 50 square feet or so. I don't know. It's,
and 4 people are living
4 there? People live there, 2 kids, mother, father. And that's, I mean, that was part of a bunch of units like that in this it's a slum, and it's all open sewers there. And I have a ton of photo video stuff that I could include in the podcast as well, but yeah, so that, I think I told you, but at the end of that day, I get back to my hotel and I sit down to write, and I just am bawling crying because it's just so intense to see that level of poverty and that level of suffering. But also at the same time, the kids are, they smile and they're happier than anybody here in the States. So it's a weird, you get a really weird dichotomy. And so trying to process that, trying to stay emotionally, like, I think my first reaction is to shut down emotionally, because you just can't process that level of need, and there's nothing you can do. So when I came back to the hotel, I was like, how do I continue to reflect on this stuff and not allow myself to go like, meep, shut down, let me go into robot mode. So writing really helped me do that, and just writing every day about the people that I met, the things that I saw, and I think it's selfishly for me, it's one of those experiences that I think changes your perspective, it humbles you, and if I could somehow organize a way for everyone at Chapelwood to go, I would, because it's one of those experiences. You would love it.
I want,
you would freaking love it. You would love it. I mean,
all that pain in one place. Let's go.
You would love it. No CrossFit there, but yeah, the people there are so beautiful that you would just, that you would just love them so much.
There's something about India that I've always wanted to go. Yeah. You know, it's one of those places that have held something in my consciousness about, just whether it's just that level of compressed humanity.
Yep.
They're also, the spiritual story of India is amazing. It's where Thomas went after the resurrection, and after he was confronted both with his own uncertainty and suspicion, and then when he was confronted with the resurrected Jesus, the story says he got on a freighter alone and went to India to talk about this one God in the midst of a thousand gods,
right?
And you will still find, like, the most popularly named churches in India are St. Thomas. Thomas is still one of the most popular given names in India of boys when they're born. Like, the legacy of this man on that culture is still... I did a wedding a couple of years ago with a family from India. And I said, what church do y'all go to in India? Oh, St. Thomas.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Yeah, it's really fascinating too. The government in India is largely Hindu-based.
Uh-huh.
And in the Hindu religion, they believe in reincarnation, I believe, in some form. So if you're born into poverty, you're that's where you're supposed to be. And you should be in poverty. There's a reason you're there, essentially.
Pretty convenient for those in power, I guess.
I know. So they block a lot of nonprofit organizations from coming in and helping the people in the slums. So when we went to apply for visas, we couldn't say that we were going for any nonprofit or
relief work.
Yeah, no relief work, because they wouldn't approve the visas.
Wow.
So you can kind of get a sense of how it would be difficult to go ahead and you know, change the circumstances of a people group when their own government doesn't believe that they should be anywhere other than where they are financially.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess religion colludes in every culture to keep people asleep occasionally, where it should be something that wakes people up, where I don't know much about reincarnation. Though if it's true, I might not be coming back in I'm coming back in a lower form next time, I'm pretty sure.
some sort of ground dwelling bird.
Yeah. If I'm lucky, I will not have legs in my next life. On my belly slithering somewhere. But I do think that I just wonder, like the radical grace that we, you know, understand as a part of our nature. It should revolutionize the way that we look at goods and services and the things we own and don't own.
Yes.
John's preaching right now in Philippians and just preached through that passage in 2 Philippians about kenosis, that deep self-emptying, right? And so when you don't need anything because it's all been given, everything's gift, then you can give it away, you know?
Right.
So how did that, what affected you there? Like, what are some of the things that a week, not even back yet, what are some of the things that are lingering in your consciousness and in your soul?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is gratitude for what we have here, what we've been given that we don't deserve. Mm. There was a conversation I had with somebody and I don't know if they were Hindu or not, but they were like, do you think that there was something earned in how you were raised, or was it roll of the dice that you were raised in America to a white family that was middle class? And that really hit me, because it's like the randomness of life and existence. And that's, I mean, that conversation is way too heavy and heady for me even to comprehend. But having gratitude for where I am and then how to give back, I think, is the biggest thing that I took away from that.
Yeah.
Because the family that had they're making $1 a day washing clothes, barely making rent. Rent's probably, you know, $30 a month or $40 a month for that little closet. The knee jerk reaction is to just go like, here's
a month.
Here's a month.
I mean, here's 8 months.
Here's 8 months.
Would not put you back at all.
Yeah. Here's a year. And then it's taking a step back from that and then going, how do you actually make a change? How do you make a long-term change in these communities through organizations like Asher House that we were with and others that are there? So the biggest thing for me is, and I'm still processing it and working through jet lag. At the same time. So it's just kind of like I'm waking up at all hours of the night, like, where am I?
You're still in Munich somewhere. Right?
Yeah, I'm in Munich. Way back. Yesterday I got to Chapelwood at like 5:30 in the morning. All the lights were out. I was the only one here.
And you're like, let's go, people. Little Energizer
money. I'm sending Matt emails.
I'm the only one up in your life.
And I got here, and in my mind, I was like, this could really be, I could be in a dream state right now. Who knows?
Yeah.
Because it was just that being in two different time zones is so weird. But still processing everything, but gratitude is a big one. And then, because I'm a little, if you're familiar with the Berkman, I'm a little bit of a red. Mm-hmm. So I see the need, I experience it, and then I go like, what can we do? You know, what's the next step?
Oh yeah.
Because there are ways to help. There's ways to make a difference. And there's, especially where we are, there's people who want to help.
Yes.
They just might not know the right avenues and ways to be helpful. Mm-hmm. Or even understand the need. Why help? You know, why give to these communities? So that's the thing that I've been processing and helping these organizations with. One of the ways that I give back is helping them with their marketing, helping them with their website. Since that's something that I do for a living, a service that I give back is, how can I help you guys communicate?
Raise awareness.
Raise awareness. And what's the story? Cause I love telling stories, and there's a billion stories in India that need to be told.
Yeah.
So.
Is there a place where you're putting your photography and videos or anything about this experience yet? Like if I want to go check that out and go, huh, I'm really interested in that.
Those will live, and I can put this in the show notes, but I believe the website is asherhouseinternational.com.
Okay.
Or .org. I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
But we did interviews with maybe 10 different families there. And they're all speaking in Hindi. We got to get them translated to English. And I haven't even looked at any of the content yet, but that will be coming at some point.
Okay.
And really excited to share the photos, and those will all be on that website as well at some point. But yeah, I mean, there's also ways to give there. There's ways to get involved. I'm super excited and serious about potentially having a group from Chapelwood go next year or in 2 years to experience that. I'd love for you to go.
I'd love to go.
People like Bobby and others. I think it's an incredible experience. Mm. And I know Chapelwood gives to you know, so many organizations that are making an impact in places like this. But I think there's just a special place in my heart for the people of India. Whatever reason, God's just kind of put that on my heart, and I was able to go 7 years ago, and then through the pandemic and all this stuff, I haven't been able to go back until this year. So,
oh wow! So this is a return visit.
It was a return visit. In my office, I still have pictures that I took 7 years ago.
I've seen those. They're beautiful.
From India. So, it's one of those. It's one of those things that always kind of lives in the back of your mind, because you know there's an entire people group that are suffering. Hmm. So going throughout your day, you know, there's always a moment where I think about those people, people that I've met, and pray for them. And
it's interesting. I've never had to be in a place where the prayer, "Give us this day our daily bread," was anything but conceptual, you know, I mean, because of the random blessing of being born in a zip code that had more bread than it needed. Mm. That and then to be, you know, like that, my kind of India experience, it was in Mexico, you know, with Mother Teresa's nuns and working there for there's something about, and but also I had a ripcord,
right?
I had a passport, I was going home, you know,
right?
And so And I remember it was a nun there that said, you know, part of what America has to, part of their, she didn't say job, but it may have been work, is to learn how to live simply so that others can simply live.
Mm.
And I thought holding that tension between, oh, can I live more simply so that, and make a, you know, open up my both resources and all the, you know, so others can just a dollar a day.
Right.
Trying to figure out how to feed two kids. I mean, that shouldn't happen for brothers and sisters in Christ around the world, you know?
Yes, absolutely. It's just almost hard to, it's almost hard to imagine. So, I think staying vigilant and aware of the resources that we have, and then how can we stay in those moments with those people.
Yeah,
I think I have a tendency, we all do, you get out of the environment and then you stop thinking about
right
the people of Mexico or India or wherever. So for me, my daily practice has been trying to sleep through the night and not wake up at midnight, but also like, how do I stay in those moments with those people and continue to pray, continue to think about ways to trim my resources here so I can apply
get
them somewhere
more there,
else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do I need to order DoorDash every week? Or, you know, are there other ways that I can get back? You know, it's just the level of opulence here versus some of these third world countries is pretty extreme. So, I mean, I don't really have much else other than that. I am spending a lot of time writing, so I'm sure that will live somewhere. But for the time being, I'm just incredibly humbled by the experience am talking about it as much as I can. Mm. So,
what does Asher House do? What are they doing in India?
So currently there are, like I mentioned, the four schools. There were 16 before the pandemic. That's been whittled down to four because of lack of resources. Yeah. So a lot of other people were able to donate, and through financial struggles or whatever it may be, it's down to four now. So essentially what Asher House does is they bring in donations. It's a very small organization. It's not a high budget organization, and they don't take a salary for any of their staffing. All the money is diverted directly to the food uniforms, backpacks, books, and then paying the teachers there in Mumbai. So,
so it's a school. It's an actual school.
Four different schools. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'll show you photos of it, but I mean, you say it's a school, it's half the size of this room, with no AC and, packed with kids, 60 kids. They'll pack in to two different rooms in a school. So it's about 100, 120 kids per location, with two teachers. And,
dear Lord,
it is. Yeah. It's insane. But the level of attentiveness, like, and attention that these kids pay and their ability to recite, do mathematics, you're just like, I'm like, oh my God. So they have curriculum that they've built, and connections that they've made with a network of churches in India called New Life. So through New Life, they're able to communicate. And then as new donors come on, they're just expanding to more and more schools. So, long-term goal, I think, would be to have 100 schools and the infrastructure's there to support that. So right now what they're wanting to do is tell the story and get more people involved. So that's kind of where they're at.
That's great.
Yeah.
So glad you're a part of that. I can't wait for us to figure out either how to partner or how to be a part of that resource giving. And yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, next week, coming up on the podcast, we have Paul Chilcote, who's a professor and I think he's a research fellow at the Wesley House in Cambridge, and which is really, it's an interesting place. When I did my postdoc in Cambridge, I lived there for 2 years, and also taught, and so taught Wesley and Wesley students that were studying at and attached to the Wesley House, and it's a really great, think of Hogwarts when you think of houses, you know, the Wesley House is like Hufflepuff, you know,
it's so Slytherin.
That would be Trinity. So yeah, you have these different schools that form houses, and the houses where the students stay and eat, and it's residential, and, but it's all connected to, and the Federation, of the College Federation, particularly within the theological community, there was, you know, you'd have different houses. So Wesley had a house there that actually was on the property of Jesus Green, and they were having, and Paul will be able to talk about this next week, but they sold their property back to Jesus College, and then took that money and built really a pretty high-end research center for the Wesleyan kind of community. And so I was there in February doing a visiting scholarship and lecturing, and was able to walk through the Wesley House again. It's phenomenal.
That's cool.
And so I'm excited about meeting him. He wasn't there when I was there, but I'm excited about being in conversation with him about some of the things that are happening globally in the Wesleyan community. So
awesome.
Be great. Yeah.
Right on.
Great.
And John will be back with us next week.
John will be
and
back.
And I'll be behind the camera.
Now, thank you for sharing your story and your life, and I think being able to be connected to the Asher House more, and to the need, the opportunity in the community that is available there, it'd be life changing. So thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. I'm Jeff Wood.
And I'm Matt Russell.
And this is Pod Have Mercy. We're not as professional as John is at this.